You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Yet another beautiful day in the neighborhood, everybody. Welcome to 2A Radio. You know, I've got to tell you that Republic Broadcasting has been doing a lot of wonderful things, bringing on some great hosts. I mean, Pastor Manning, I love sitting here before my show and listening to his. If at any time you deem it something that you would like to do, please call up, donate towards RBN. Keep the network on. Get our second network up and running. So here's the number for that. You can call the business office, and that business office number is 800-724-2719. Again, 1-800-724-2719. You can also send something in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. That's in Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Of course, if you ever want to call here on the show, give me a shout. The number here is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. We are always looking forward to having the truth out there, getting the information to you, and, of course, the people that would otherwise like to disguise the truth and make this whole thing about dispelling information to you, which generates them money in the lamestream media. You're not going to get that truth. They don't like folks like us, which is just great. Because being a thorn on the side of the man is something that I just love. So, you know, this is just something that I dig doing. Pardon me. I'm trying to pull up something on my computer here. Here in Nevada, we have what is known as the Clark County Shooting Park. That is just in, it's just outside of Las Vegas. In fact, it's just outside of North Las Vegas, but is the Clark County Shooting Park. And it is the biggest, baddest, prettiest shooting park in the country. This thing is, it's like 2 square miles or something. It's got its first phase done. They have something ridiculous, like 28 or maybe 30 different trap and skeet ranges. I mean, you go all the way down the range area, and it's 3/4 of a mile from end to end. I mean, it's incredible. With all sorts of RV parking, they have a handgun and rifle area way up the hill above that. They have a private training area up there. So if anybody's going to be coming to Las Vegas If anybody's going to be coming to Las Vegas for any sort of reason and you want to check out the Clark County Shooting Park, bring a gun with you and go up there and check it out. There are no rental guns, or if you just want to look at it and take a look, it's probably more than a cab fare. It would be more prudent to rent a car and drive out there, but a cab from the Strip, it's going to be a bit. It's a good 20-minute drive or so, and round trip in a cab would be awfully pricey, but it's something to check out if you're going to be here. I'm trying to promote it just a bit because, unfortunately, that park has opened, and it's operating at a 2-to-1 loss. For every dollar that they bring in, it costs them $2 to make it. So, you know, we don't want to see this thing start to crumble or go into any sort of a slowdown mode, because it's only in phase one, and I think there's 4 total phases. We'd like to see them actually expand this thing for everybody who lives in the area and anybody who would visit want to go out there shooting. So I'm trying to pimp out the Clark County Shooting Park. You can certainly search that on the internet and see how things are. So check it out, look it out, look it up. If you happen to be in Las Vegas, go out there and check it out. We're going to be getting into some information on a report for the need for self-defense, according to some gun law experts, after we return from the break. So stay tuned. We'll be getting right to that. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. I got to tell you here, we sit on the radio and speak about being able to protect yourself from bad guys that are out there. Everyday bad guys. Homegrown, good old American, red-blooded scumbags that are out there that would care to prey on you. Well, an analysis of an Associated Press report released over the weekend shows that Americans need to be able to defend themselves and others from terrorist attacks right here within the United States, according to gun rights expert John Schneider. He said that over the weekend. Schneider cited an AP article stating that, quote, a U.S.-born spokesman for Al-Qaeda on Saturday urged Muslims living in the U.S. and Europe to carry out attacks there, calling it a duty and an obligation. Really? Now, this guy, this U.S.-born spokesman for Al-Qaeda, is a U.S. citizen. Now, Snyder said that law-abiding American citizens must be able to get, carry, and use firearms needed for self-defense without unnecessary legal encumbrances. This includes handguns. He says that the former National Rifle Association editor, Snyder, is a public affairs director for the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms and treasurer of the Second Amendment Foundation. Snyder noted the AP piece quoted a director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the Michigan chapter, stating that with regard to the spokesman's statement that, quote, I see little or no chance of such sentiment taking root in metropolitan Detroit. However, said Snyder, the director did not condemn the spokesman's statement. Oh, I just don't see that taking root here in Detroit. They say Detroit, right next to Detroit there in Dearborn, Michigan, is the largest Muslim immigrant settlement or demographic in the entire United States. If you're a Muslim and you're in the United States, chances are you might be in Dearborn, Michigan, right outside of Detroit. There's plenty in Detroit as well. Which is kind of odd to me, because if you look at the weather conditions in the Middle East, where most of these folks come from, and the weather conditions in northern Michigan, they are like 180 degrees, just a lot different. However, maybe that's why they moved there. They're getting tired of the heat and the sun, and they want to have a little bit cooler temperatures and some snow. Snyder said that law enforcement and intelligence agencies work diligently to prevent terrorist attacks on law-abiding Americans. However, as competent as they may be, they can't be every place at every moment, and Americans wouldn't want them to be. In fact, the final analysis, the responsibility for self-defense, resides in the hands of individuals. Guys, I've been telling you this since I got on the air in March of 2009. Most of you understand this and take it to heart. At the moment that someone attacks, most oftentimes, it is not being telegraphed. Somebody's not going to telegraph to you that an attack is coming. Most of the time, you find out that an attack is coming once you are in the process of initially being victimized, as in someone's jumping you and starting to beat on you, or a bullet has ripped through your arm. Something like that is generally, in most cases, statistically speaking, the first indication that you're under attack. Not everybody's going to telegraph it. Maybe. Maybe not. If we're talking about American-style terrorism here in the States, street terrorism here in the States, like what they experience in Baghdad on a daily basis, like what they have experienced in Israel on a regular basis, if that's the sort of thing that is imminent here in the U.S. or coming this way, we've got to remain armed. As a matter of fact, those who don't want to be armed should stay at home and live on their computers, order in pizza, sell their car, become hermits, and never leave their cave. Those of us who are out on the street, if we're out on the street, we're packing, we're trained, we're prepared, we're ready to defend off any sort of attack, be it, you know, the regular stuff we're used to by the American-born, red-blooded scumbags that we've got, or a scumbag who's been imported from another country that wants to terrorize us. We're ready for them. Here's another quote. Public officials, journalists, clergymen, educators, and merchants ought to realize that guns in the hands of responsible citizens can save lives and are necessary for personal and public safety, according to John Schneider. Now, I couldn't agree more. Let me read that to you again. It's perfect. Public officials, journalists, clergymen, educators, and merchants ought to realize that guns in the hands of responsible citizens can save lives and are necessary for personal and public safety. Now, why did he pick out these five groups? Public officials, generally someone who's either been elected to office, appointed, or hired into some public official arena, who are oftentimes the first one to say, you can't have guns in this area on our property, be it city, county, state, federal, whatever. And you should be able to rely on our police. So those public officials, they want gun control, not because of the guns, but because of the control. Journalists, wow. Journalists tend to go as anti-gun as you can. As a matter of fact, there's a journalist here in Pahrump, Nevada, who is part of the Pahrump Valley Times. This paper comes out twice a week, like, I don't know, Tuesdays and Fridays or something. He wrote a story about, 2.5 weeks ago that had a bunch of candidates at a meeting, and a woman who is a local attorney was there. She had a gun in a holster, revolver in a holster, on her belt, and she was questioning the guy that's running, one of the candidates that's running for district attorney. Well, the caption under that big photograph said, it named her, it said she's, Lorraine? Was that her name? I forget her name. It says she attacks candidate, whatever his name was, at a meeting for candidates at this particular location with a holster on her belt and a gun in it. So basically saying that she had her gun and she attacked somebody. All she was doing was standing there with a gun on and questioning the guy. And then if you read the article, it goes through and it's just a bunch of BS. So I wrote a rather pointed and somewhat scathing letter to the editor, finally got published last Friday, about these journalists. This guy in particular, Mark Waite, W-A-I-T-E, I believe his name is, just doesn't get it. Has no clue whatsoever. A lot of people in this town carry guns. Most of the people in this town are quite conservative. Yet this lefty anti-gunner writes for our local paper, and I don't get it. Clergymen, the third one on the list of five. Clergy often preach, oh, you know, we shouldn't have to deal with guns, you know, love and respect everyone and blah-da-da euphoria. Yeah, okay, great. However, once we leave the church, oftentimes we end up into a seedier part of town or we have the guys that don't go to church, don't really care about that sermon, that are going to turn you into their victims. Educators, my goodness, since the 1960s, we've had educators that have gone so far off the leftist end that it's almost impossible to find a conservative higher education in this country, let alone that in our public schools. Educators that live in their educating world, which has nothing to do with the private sector, And they don't get it. They live in theory. Theoretically, we shouldn't need guns. It's a bad deal. And merchants. We say merchants for two reasons. Merchants have two things, usually. Customers and employees. And if they put up a sign that says, no guns allowed in here, that's great. Don't shop there. If they tell their employees, you're not allowed to bring a gun on property when you come to work, you know what? Don't shop there. Or find another job if that's the case. You know, when certain employers, and there's employers up and down the Las Vegas Strip, the different properties that say employees are not allowed to have personally owned firearms on our property at all, which means they have to travel unarmed to work and then travel home unarmed. And oftentimes people are stopping on the way into work, more often on the way home from work, unarmed. So that's why he named these three. Five. Public officials, journalists, clergymen, educators, and merchants ought to realize that guns in the hands of responsible citizens can save lives and are necessary for personal and public safety. Hear ye. Thank you, Mark Schneider. Stay tuned, guys. We've got information out of New Jersey about gun laws. It might actually get relaxed when we return from the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio. RoninTactical.com has certified concealed carry training specialists that travel to you and your group of self-protection advocates. Organize a group of friends, family, or co-workers who take their responsibility of self-protection seriously, and RoninTactical.com will send out a certified training specialist who will provide a course of instruction that will get you and your group certified to carry concealed in over 30 states while providing you, the organizer, a commission for organizing the event. Do you travel for work, family, or vacation and want to remain armed and safe when traveling? Contact RoninTactical.com for details on staying home and having one of our certified professionals travel to you to provide the training and credentials for you and your group to safely and legally carry concealed in over 30 states. Call 888-416-4809 or go online to RoninTactical.com.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Hey guys, on the East Coast, there's a number of different states that have really, really good gun laws, and some that are a little bit strict. New Jersey is one of those. And they're saying that in New Jersey, the laws on guns may be relaxed a bit. So let me read this to you. There may be momentum for expanding the rights of law-abiding gun owners in New Jersey. And the way that's written just really just makes the tips of my ears glowing red hot. Expanding a right. That means that the government has control over a right. Thank you to the 14th Amendment. With unprecedented police department layoffs across the state, especially in urban communities, authorities anticipate response times will increase and crime prevention initiatives will be the first law enforcement services that are cut. Next year's 2% property tax cap will decrease the number of police officers in the state by 30%. Can you believe that? Decreasing the number of cops by 30%. 3 out of 10 cops are going to lose their jobs. Says State Police Policemen's Benevolent Association President Tony Wieners. From January 1st, 2009 through October, 12% of local police officers in the state were laid off or retired, he says. Police departments in some South Jersey municipalities, including Cherry Hill, Winslow, Collingswood, have already laid off officers, and most are under a hiring freeze. Camden Mayor Dana Redd said she may have to lay off 188 police officers, and there's also the threat of job losses in Medford. So what end should people be So, to what end should people be able to protect themselves if government isn't doing their best job? Well, June's Supreme Court decision in McDonald v. Chicago held state or local regulations cannot prevent law-abiding Americans from their constitutional right to possess and bear arms for self-defense. New Jersey residents and visitors have the right to use deadly force on their properties against criminal trespassers, according to the self-defense law. Last amended, in 1987, was that self-defense law in New Jersey. The state's gun control regulations are considered very tight and generally prevent people from carrying concealed weapons. Some lawmakers hope that McDonald v. Chicago decision, which one Supreme Court justice predicted will spark a slew of lawsuits, will loosen New Jersey's regulations at a time when it seems most necessary. Really. We hope it opens a door, says Luis Crestas something or other, chief of staff for the Assemblywoman Allison Little McHouse, a Republican out of Sussex, New Jersey. In Pennsylvania, where gun-carrying laws are less strict, a bill passed by the legislature and being considered by Governor Ed Rendell would expand self-protection rights of lawful gun ownership beyond their homes and vehicles. Expanding rights. Some people just don't get it. They don't understand it. The bill, not forwarded by major police organizations there, was a topic last week in Pennsylvania's gubernatorial race. Democratic candidate Dan Honorato, said he wouldn't veto the bill, and Republican candidate Tom Corbett stated he would sign it. So one says he'll sign it, then, well, I won't veto it. Doesn't mean you'll sign it. It means it'll probably sit on your desk for 30 days and become law. This spokesman we spoke of earlier, whose last name I have no idea how to pronounce, said if McHouse were in the Pennsylvania legislature, she would have been a sponsor of the bill, expanding the laws and, as they say, expanding the rights. People just don't get it. Anyhow, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to not finish reading this whole ridiculous thing. I'm just going to start giving you my comments on the whole deal. In any state where they restrict your right to carry guns, and they restrict it to the point where, you know, you're allowed to protect yourself on your own property, but not out in the general public. Why? Why is that? The government agents, the cops, have absolutely no legal responsibility to have to protect me anywhere. And I'm most at risk of being a victim when out on the street. You know, gun control is un-American because it challenges the sovereignty of the people by attacking the individual rights and personal independence which backs our sovereignty. And, as well, the road to tyranny is paved by claims of necessity. We need to keep people from being armed in this particular area or in this city because blah, blah, blah. We have high crime rates. That's been the whole thing in Chicago. It's the whole reason for the McDonald case. We have high crime rates here and there's a lot of bad guys with guns, so we're outlawing guns. What? What kind of nonsense is that? You're going to take the guns away from the good, honest, law-abiding people so that only the criminals will have them? Wow. If that's not the brainchild of an intellectual mongoloid, I don't know what is. Unreal. Guys, stay tuned. We'll be right back. We've got plenty more to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
All right, guys, welcome back. On yesterday's show, I read a story and talked about a woman who wrote for a magazine and was an anti-gun, some style magazine of some kind, and was anti-gun until she got stalked. Well, as it turns out, I was able to find her article. So I'm going to read this to you. It says, "I was anti-gun until I got stalked. I can't stand weapons, but after disturbing emails and letters, I decided to arm myself with more than words. You need to arm yourself. I blinked at the Portland police officer in my living room. This uniformed bear of a man packing a gun, a nightstick, a radio, and who knew what else, was responding to an ongoing stalker problem that had started several months earlier. I'd received letters, a phone call, a few packages, and several emails from this unbalanced stranger who'd read a few newspaper stories I'd written and taken a shine to me. When the last letter arrived, mentioning my boyfriend Mike, thoughts on his on religion, and a trip I'd taken but hadn't told anyone about, I was seriously alarmed. But get a gun? Surely I'd misheard him. He says, getting a concealed carry permit isn't hard, the officer continued, and they make ladies' purses with concealed weapons compartments. In that moment, I understood the phrase, blood turning to ice. I'm afraid of guns. When you get right down to it, I abhor them. I used to date a guy who owned a handgun and regularly trekked into the woods with his friends to shoot. I made him move the small gun safe from beneath the bed to another room before I'd agree to stay overnight. Now there's hoplophobia. But that morning was like a perfect storm of firearms. The first thing Mike had said to me when I opened my eyes, hours before the officer made a suggestion, before my neighbor confided she'd been thinking of getting a gun for hiking and kayaking trips, before my retired military uncle emailed me saying that arming myself probably wouldn't be a bad idea was, maybe you should get a gun. Apparently the universe really wanted me packing heat. The officer saw the dismay on my face. Most bullet wounds don't kill people, he assured me, and it would be self-defense. And he's actually right. In a metropolitan area, I believe it's 86% of shootings are survivable in a metropolitan area where medical is close. She continues by saying, I spent the rest of the day in a general freak out. I was hopeless trying to get any work done. Periodically, I do web searches on handguns. I discover that Oregon is a right-to-carry state and that it costs $65 for a concealed carry permit, $50 for the four-year permit, and $15 for the background check. I learned the difference between a pistol and a revolver. A revolver's chambers revolve, like a six-shooter in Hollywood Westerns. And I read that 357 Magnums and 38s were ideal for women interested in a gun for self-defense because they're relatively lightweight, aren't prone to jamming, and don't carry too many bullets. Well, wherever you read that, I'd like to retort. Continuing, she says, because who really needs a 20-round magazine when you're defending against a stalker? Six or seven bullets will do you just fine, read one web comment. These are the sofa commandos, the armchair commandos writing these things. I just don't get it. Let's see. But the idea of owning a gun made me sick to my stomach. That afternoon, when I escaped from a fitful nap, I dreamed people were pointing double-barreled shotguns at me. When I thought about it, I realized I'd grown up with firearms in the house, from the antique rifle mounted on the sun porch wall to the Colt 45 in my father's sock drawer. When I was seven, I watched my cousin shoot targets on the family farm in Virginia. I'd even picked up the hot shell casings as souvenirs. As an adolescent, I'd spent my own money on a Daisy air pistol. I was surely the only girl at my single-sex prep school who owned a weapon, and I trained with it regularly, which is probably why, years later, I was an ace shot in paintball. Even the ex-military guys clamored to get me on their teams, I'm sure. But that was a far cry from carrying or firing live rounds. As Mike tried to sleep, I fretted out loud. I told him a firearm in the house made me nervous, that I feared the weapon would be turned on one of us, and there'd be an accident. I told him I believed in compassion and peace. I told him the very idea of a gun was a compromise of my principles. You know, I believe in compassion and peace as well. And if compassion and peace doesn't work, and someone brings an attack towards me, I'll shoot them. It's their compassion and peace that needs adjustment, and it's going to get adjusted by a couple of rounds to the chest. Maybe I just look at this in a different light. Mike said, which would you prefer, compromising your principles or getting abducted by a crazy man? That's when the old Theodore Roosevelt adage popped into my head. Speak softly and carry a big stick. You're right. And I finally got it. I can still be the compassionate, diplomatic, interfaith, groovy gal I've always been. I'll just be packing heat in case negotiations tank. When I got another letter from the stalker, a movie schedule with Showtime circled alongside a handwritten note that was way too familiar, Mike looked up at the nearest gun dealer and pointed me and put me in the car. The guy is pissing me off, he said. I already have enough stress without this. So now, after background check and fingerprinting, I have my very own Ruger 38 Special, a black 5-shot double-action revolver that fits my small hands disturbingly well. Disturbingly well? Incredibly well? Wonderfully well? How could it be disturbingly well? I was petrified when I went to the firing range for the first time. The police officer behind the counter laughed at my Ruger. Oh, you've got one of those dinky guns, he said. He warned me how bad the recoil was going to hurt, which scared me even more. By the way, if you happen to be someone who works in a gun store or on a range, do not pull that crap with your customers. Don't do it. Oh, you're going to shoot that? That's going to suck. What sort of sick-minded individual does that? We're there to further people shooting. All right? More on that after this. I have a comment to make on something. The woman standing behind me leaned over and whispered, "Don't mind the guys trying to be all macho." She was packing the same make and model I had. Good for her. Another officer took pity and walked me into the range to demonstrate every single step of holding, loading, aiming, and firing my weapon. He showed me how to stand and how to eject the bullet's casing afterwards. Still, even with ear protection, I literally jumped every time someone else pulled a trigger. Gunshots are loud. Of course you did. Part of the thing with an indoor range is all of the echo. It's a lot louder indoors. She says, my hands were shaking as I loaded the 38. I was still flinching every time the guy in the next lane fired off his 45. I focused on everything the police officer showed me. I kept the barrel pointed downrange and my fingers curled around the cylinder until I was ready to snap it back into place. I remembered to keep my thumbs off the gun and to keep the grip lodged firmly against the fleshy part between my thumb and hand. I aimed, put my finger on the trigger, and fired. Keep your thumbs off the gun. He must have been teaching her the flying thumbs technique. The gun kicked hard, but not as bad as I'd feared, and it was more startling than painful. I shot a few more rounds, making adjustments to my aim for the recoil and my own jumpiness. After I'd gone through two full cylinders, or 10 bullets, Mike took a look at the paper target. Every single shot had not only hit the target, but gone right into the chest and head of my paper dummy. Mike was impressed. Frankly, so was I. My question is, where were you aiming, lady? After going through a box of 50 rounds, I left the range with my black smudged fingers and smelled of gunpowder. My firing hand was sore the next day, and the truth is, 2 months and more target practice later, I'm still not entirely comfortable with having a handgun in the house. Whenever the dog erupts in the middle of the night in a barking frenzy, my thoughts go immediately to my 38. But I'm not as afraid of my stalker as I used to be. I'm now armed and with more than words and good intentions. He keeps sending upsetting letters. Even if he never pays a visit, Jenny's got a gun and she knows how to use it. Why don't you take all those letters when they come in and just burn them, throw them away, whatever. I don't get it. So anyhow, that is the letter to back up yesterday's story, which, you know, decent stuff, especially for someone who was anti-gun and is still afraid of the gun, still suffers from hoplophobia. Just the unexplained fear of the actual inanimate object known as a firearm. Now, when I was talking about, you know, the guy at the gun store basically laughing things off, I got to tell you guys, when it comes to being pro-gun, we're all in this together. But for some reason, we get into all of these contests of urination where we all try to get our own little thing going. You know, I had a listener email me, and I read the email, and I gave you the response here on the air. He emailed me and said that he had a car PM9 or MP9. PM, is it PM9? That he wanted to load, and he had broken it in with, you know, 200 rounds of ball ammo and wanted to carry 124 grain gold dots in it. And what did I think? My response was, carry 147 grain ball ammo. Just carry that. You don't need the whiz-bang hollow points. So, as it turns out, I have this nifty feature that alerts me anytime my name has been put up anywhere on the internet. So, comes back with one. This guy posts something at like the Sig Arms forum or something like that that says, hey, I emailed Bill Karn. He's got his radio show. He's on Top Shot. And this is blotted out what I asked. And he said carry 147 grain ball ammo. What do you guys think? So, of course, we get the guys in there that are just going to, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And, you know, what's a reality show star contestant got to do with anything? Oh, the guy's got a radio show? Pfft, like he knows anything. So they start bagging me for having no credentials whatsoever. A couple of guys got on there and just gave basic, you know, regurgitated scientific evidence. So I'm reading through all of this, and I'm thinking, you know, what a bunch of small-minded tools. Just a bunch of small-minded tools. We're all in this thing together. So I crafted together probably a 12 or 14-paragraph response to these guys, addressed a couple of their shoddy responses, like, somebody put in there, well, Hollywood stars 2 years ago thought they knew about politics, enough said. Well, what does that have to do to add to the conversation? So I started with my credentials. You know, guys, I worked as a cop for Las Vegas Metro in some of the seediest areas of Las Vegas. I have been a 5-weapons qualified defensive rangemaster, one of very few in the country, for the last several years. Was a lead rangemaster at the largest private firearms training organization in the world. Served as the lead rangemaster and a program manager for the Special Programs Division, U.S. Army Department of Defense, for their Tactical Operations Program, where I hold a certificate as a recognized expert of tactical operations and weapons of mass destruction in anti-terrorist environments. I shot for blood and I have the scars to prove it. Now, that's out of the way. The very most important thing when it comes to shooting is shot placement. Everything else pales in comparison to shot placement. Once you have shot placement, then caliber becomes the next most important. From there, much further down the list, what actual bullet you're using. So the discussion was, essentially, I want to take number 3 and make it number 1. What bullet should I carry? On top of that, this little car PM9 carries, I think, 6 rounds, maybe 6 plus 1, or it's 5 plus 1. It's 6 or 7 rounds total. Not the most advisable carry gun. It's tiny, and it doesn't carry much in the way of ammo. However, I will always profess I'd much rather you carry a small gun than no gun at all. Carry whatever you'll carry every single day. If you're not going to carry your full-size 1911 every day, but you'll carry a car PM9 every day, then carry the car PM9 and carry it every day. Once we have that, we need to make sure that the gun is reliable. Okay? So find the gun you're going to carry. Make sure it is reliable first. The most important thing about a defensive handgun is reliability. Like the most important thing, if you have to shoot a bad guy, is shot placement. So shot placement is number 1 on the accuracy, on the ammo end. Reliability is number 1 on the gun end. If you start putting ammo that is otherwise maybe not quite as reliable as ball ammo in your gun, then you're doing yourself a disservice. Let's say one out of every 15 or 20 rounds that you fire, you have to clear a malfunction. Never carry that ammo on the street. Never. You'll get yourself, you'll get your family killed. Nobody wants that. Don't do it. 147 grain 9mm, why? It's traveling a little slower. And it will punch through without the risk of so much deflection of a lighter bullet. You want penetration through someone. You don't need all this expansion. You've got just so much energy, guys. And it's either going to go in or it's going to go through and then open and not go so deep. And that energy is going to be expelled to the outside of the bullet as it expands, if it expands. Hollow points are unreliable at expanding. Carry 147 grain ball ammo is my suggestion. Otherwise, do what you want. Anyhow, my whole point in this is we're all in this together, but then we still get bickering inside the pro-gun community, which drives me up the wall. Keep focused, guys. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. We'll be right back. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
Hey, welcome back. You know, I'm going to read an article which is professing the same bunch of garbage about the U.S. guns in Mexico as everybody else, with the lies that the government has put out there and the falsities which will just not go away, even though we uncovered this, 15, 16 months ago. Still won't go away because writers won't do their research. Unnecessary assault weapons hurt America and Mexico. Is the title of this. President Bill Clinton signed the federal assault weapons ban into law in 1994, prohibiting the sale of military-style guns, including AK-47s and AR-15s. When the ban expired in 2004, a proposed 10-year extension was voted down. BATFE statistics show that 7,770 guns sold in the U.S. in 2008 were traced to Mexico, according to a March 17, 2009 article on FoxNews.com entitled Gun Advocates Ready for Battle on Federal Assault Weapons Ban. Here's the BS. Almost 95% of Mexican drug cartels got their firearms from the U.S. that same year. You can imagine how many lives could have been saved if, in 2004, the extension had been approved. Let's not talk about Mexico. You don't care about Mexico, you care about America, right? What about the September 28th shooting at Texas A&M, where a student opened fire in the library and afterwards committed suicide? Do you care about that? He was using an AK-47, an assault gun that can shoot 600 rounds per minute. You can't prevent someone from doing this just by posting weapons prohibited signs in the entrances of public buildings. Instead, you can help pass a law that prohibits someone from getting weapons like an AK-47. Some Americans love the Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. But why don't you really want an assault rifle for protection? It sounds fine to have a 9mm pistol to protect your house or your family, but do you need an AK-47? If police officers don't carry one, why would you need to? If you want an AK-47 for hunting, I recommend you take a hunting course. September 12, 2004 article in the USA Today described one man's excitement about being able to buy guns after the ban expired. Quote, it's like they were keeping the food away from you and you got hungry. It's human nature. Carrying on is this moron. A guy that obviously just doesn't get it. And unfortunately, his article is published. Someone who was so ignorant that they don't have, really, they shouldn't have the option for writing on anything such as guns, because they don't understand guns, they don't get guns, they haven't done any research on guns. Moron. That's all I have to say, guys. We'll be back tomorrow. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not.